Hello and welcome to Wanting and Wearers, the podcast by Tap and Dap, where we look back at the Morgan Recent Quick Quiz and look ahead to their upcoming ones. With me, Blake Fint, and Alec Hopkins is with me as ever, fellow Tap and Dap writer. And today we've got a bit of a special one because you're not actually looking at specific games that's gone by or forthcoming, but instead we've got our T20 Glass review, and we'll also be talking about the women's side success as well. So although it's been a while since our last episode, this one is going to be jam-packed. First of all, before we get into player ratings, Ali, the T20 competition obviously was one that you can view with disappointment. Certainly the world frame Carlton viewed it. I mean, how did you find the new format and the new group stages and how the Morgan fared?
Yeah, it's weird that it's already over. Obviously, usually finals day is a lot later in the summer. And this year with the new format, they put all the quarterfinals, I think they were on the same day, weren't they? In that week. And then obviously finals day was on Saturday. So bit of a strange one to sort of be done and dusted with the T20 Blast. But yeah, from a Glamorgan point of view, extremely frustrating. Again, it kind of is like last year. It was kind of win one, lose one for a lot of it. And, you know, in the end, they kind of really crumbled a little bit towards the back end. But what I will say is obviously on Saturday, I think we saw that the central group was probably the strongest group of the two. You know, Somerset get into finals day and then North Hants eventually winning it as well. You know, you could see the strength of that group, and it was always going to be a difficult task with those teams in there. But I think Glamorgan will, you know, and Kieran Carlson's come out and said it, right, that Glamorgan will look back and think that they've left quite a bit out there as well.
Yeah, it's funny you say it's over already, because as much as I agree with that as the competition as a whole, it feels like ages ago those two championship games were in the middle. And like, just looking back over your stats, you know, I forgot that Ned Leonard played the first four games. You know, it was like that's how long ago it was. If we get straight into the ratings, I believe you've got yours locked and loaded. I've got mine locked and loaded, and we haven't spoken to each other about them. So let's start with the batters. Kieran Carlson at the top should be a sensible place to start. The captain, 405 runs. Scored a great century against Somerset, and strike rate of nearly 200. I mean, he had a great campaign. What have you given him?
I've gone with 8.5. Yeah, as you said,
it's bringing decimals into it.
I have brought decimals just because some of these are in between one number and the other, so I've had to bring the decimals in. And I thought the only reason I haven't gone for a 9 is, I'm looking at his captaincy at times as well. And I think, although I like him as a captain, I think sometimes there is some questionable decisions in there. Bringing Asa Tribe on to open the bowling against North Hants was obviously a gamble. And sometimes you've got to roll the dice and these things don't come off. But when they don't come off, you're also open for criticism, right? And then, you know, bowling, was Jimmy Neesham the best choice at Warwickshire away? Stuff like that, you know, little things like that. Sometimes, as I said, you've got to roll the dice and you've got to take a chance. But yeah, amazing campaign from Kieran. It looked like, you know, I think he's sort of brought a lot of attention from outside of Glamorgan this season with how good a player he is. We've known that for a while, but I think now fans from other teams are really starting to take notice of him. And obviously, it's gained him a 100 contract, and hopefully, he can play games in the 100 and have a really good tournament there. Because, you know, he was the go-to this campaign. If he didn't get runs, it was an uphill battle for Glamorgan to get a lot of runs from that middle order. And if Kieran Carlson didn't get Glamorgan off to a good start, it usually meant that Glamorgan lost the game. So, yeah, key player, brilliant campaign. And, 8.5 would be 9 without some gambles not going off his way.
Yeah, I did go for a 9. In fairness, I think that point about captaincy is a really good one. I didn't really think too much about that. I just tried to think on kind of individual performances, but I do agree with some of those decisions were probably questionable. So he is a 9 for me.
He's also I think the best fielder in the team as well. We always say it. He fields in the covers quite a lot, and he's a gun fielder, isn't he? So that goes a long way as well.
Yeah, I think it does. Really good. I'm playing. When any more can be sold, like I say, that 100 at Somerset was brilliant. The only thing that maybe a bit of criticism could have been turning, you know, getting those 30 off 15 balls or 40 off 18 balls, turning it into more half centres, with just one half centre that we've against Gloucestershire in the final game, and then obviously the 100 as well was a bit of a shame. We didn't kick on to convert a bit more. So we move on to his opening partner, Will Smale, 342 runs, and average of 28.5, 350s. Slightly better campaign when I was looking back at 2025 as well. I think he beat his run tally for 2025 by about 15 runs. So steady improvement, but pretty similar. What did you go for?
I went 6.5, which might seem a little bit harsh, but you know, it's a good number of runs. 350s is nothing to be sniffed at either. It's really good from Will Smale. But the thing that really irked me about him is just the shot selection sometimes. I think back to that reverse sweep he tried to play at home against Gloucestershire, or reverse ramp rather. I think it was off the first ball, wasn't it? Or if I remember rightly. And it's just such a poor shot to play. So, you know, he's still a young player. He's still learning. So, yeah, maybe 6.5 is a bit harsh, but I just think sometimes he's a little bit of a brainless cricketer. But other than that, yeah, good number of runs. 350s, a really solid campaign for him.
Yeah, I actually went a little bit harsher. I did go with a 6. I think he ended up performing when it didn't really matter as much. All three of his 50s came in the last 5 games, I think. So, you know, he'd be lucky to still be in the side at that stage, because he was one of only, I think, 4 players to play all 12 matches. I think it was just him, Carlton, Dixon, and Crane, I believe, played all 12. And they were the only ones to do so. So, yeah, he's one of those. I think it is his best season yet in the Blast, and hopefully one day Cup, where he's going to be a more senior figure, he can kind of show that he's got a bit more responsibility. But yeah, I still think hoping a little bit more than turning one of those 50s into an 80 would have been nice, but they were all pretty much just going out. I think my score in the 60s. So that was where I kind of felt a bit held back with him. I think if we did go a bit bigger in one of those 50s and make like a real match winning score, it might be to get up. But as well on him, one day cup, just around the corner, he's obviously going to be one of the more senior guys in that side. And then 25 still. I mean, what do we think of that? I mean, I think he seems fully excited by it. He seems mature in some way, really immature in others, like you said, with his shot selection.
Yeah, I think as a guy, from what I, you know, I don't know him personally, but as a guy, what you get the sense of that he's, as you say, he's a really mature character now. You know, he's been around a fair while still being fairly young, still a bit to learn. But I think what's pleasing is, and you know, it might change in the One Day Cup, but especially in the T20, that Kieran Carlson had kind of found that opening partner throughout the Blast campaign, and he's taken on that role in the Blast. You know, it's so important at the power play to get runs on the board in the power play is another thing. I'm not too sure. I'll have to see what the side looks like, I guess. If he does do that, I think, you know, that opening role is something he can really, you know, build upon in white ball cricket now and start to really establish himself as a regular white ball opener.
Yeah. So by the time this goes out, there will be a feature with him from when I spoke to him after one of the Blast games, when he did score one of his half centuries. And at this time, we didn't know who the captain was going to be. And I did point that question through, and he said he would have enjoyed the opportunity to be captain. And I think just being a senior player in the side is something he's going to take with a bit of a privilege. You know, someone who wants to play all three formats. And you can tell he was developing. So we'll see how it goes in the One Day Cup. Acer Tribe next. So he only played 7 matches, 151 runs. No 50s, but a high score of 48 and a couple of good finishing knocks in there. So I really thought about that when I thought I'm not going to look at the stats and try to go off memory of some of the games as well. Alan?
I've given him a 7 as well. It didn't play all the games, but I think when he came in, you saw how important he was to the squad. Like, as well, I think another factor is he's been used to playing, he's been used to opening in T20 cricket, I think, for the Pal Royals and stuff, and obviously opening in Red Bull cricket as well now, and he'd had to kind of slide down the order a little bit in T20 cricket, and I thought he adapted his game really well a lot of the time, you know. Trying to think back, like Somerset away, he played a really nice innings in the middle order. And then one of the recent home games, I'm just Middlesex at home, when, you know, it wasn't a massive total, but it wasn't an easy pitch to score runs. And I think it was him and maybe Sean Dixon just knocked it around, knocked and nurdled it around quite nicely and just sucked the life out of Middlesex, really, and made it a fairly easy chase in the end. And I thought he just really played, he showed a lot of maturity. He played really pragmatic and sensible cricket, adapted his game, unselfish cricket as well. I thought it was a really, really good campaign for the games that he played. Some mixed fielding in there. I'm thinking back to that drop from on Chris Lynn against Northants at home. It was a tough chance, to be fair to him. But that was a big drop in that game. A really good campaign, and I think he showed a lot of maturity and how important he is to this team.
Yeah, I don't have much to add. I gave him a 7 as well. I think that Middlesex game really spoiled it for me. I did write down 6 and crossed it out, but 7. So I think that Middlesex game just tipped it for me. And that wasn't even his highest score out of the 46 not out. So, yeah, even though no trophies this year and just 7 matches, pretty much half what we did last year when we played every game. So I think that's perfectly reasonable. Henry Hill, I've got down next. It's sort of because I forgot Sean Dixon, so we'll do him last in the batters. Henry Hill, you know, only played 5 games, 4 innings. Had a great knock against Gloucestershire and then didn't do too much else. I've gone for 6.
Yeah, I've gone 6 as well. Decent tournament. Yeah, that innings against Gloucestershire was really good. Again, as you said, didn't do too much else, but he's a new addition to the first team side, and he's still a young player. He's still learning, he's still developing, and I think you know, there's more to come from him. But yeah, a decent first tournament, I think.
Yeah, and another one that they'll be looking to on the One Day Cup. I think he was probably even one of the candidates if they wanted to go left field for a younger captain for the One Day Cup. And they obviously like him because they see him as the kind of next on the crop of youngsters. So hopefully, in time to come, he will fulfill one of those senior roles. Chris Cook, 118 runs, obviously keeper for most of the competition. That magnificent innings to end at Blackpool is going to be, I'm sure, swinging your rating. What is it?
It has swung it. I've given him 7.5. That innings was something ridiculous, something remarkable that we've probably never seen, and likely will not see again for a long, long time. But I just think as well, you know, Glamorgan's middle order at times in this competition has really kind of frazzled. And he's just come in and he's built partnerships with people as wickets have fallen around him. He showed a bit of experience. I think his keeping's been pretty solid. I only really think back to maybe one mistake against Gloucestershire at home where there was a miss stumping. Apart from that, I think his keeping's been pretty good. He's just shown his experience and has been able to kind of dig in at the right times and know where to put his foot on the gas at other times and, you know, try and rescue games or try and get Glamorgan ahead of the 8 ball in other games. I just think, that innings of Blackpool has swung it slightly. I've probably given the extra 0.5, maybe. But, I think just a really solid tournament from him that Glamorgan needed in that middle order.
Yeah, I think I've probably been a bit harsh. I did write down 6, but I think I might be sway to give him a 7 because looking at his stride rate as well, 143. I was trying to think, you know, 143 sounds good, but when you're coming in at the end, that's, you know, that's only about 8.5 and over. I think you know, coming in towards the end. I didn't know if I saw it as disappointing or not. And obviously that Blackpool winning put it up to striker even more. So I'm just, trying to kind of keep it relative when other batters didn't perform. Did he really rescue them very often? I'm not sure. I think there was a couple of 20s in there. I think he had a better season than he did in the Blast last season. I remember he really struggled. You know what? Okay, I'll give him a 7. That Blackpool, almost single-handedly won the game, didn't he? And then the last of the batters, Sean Dixon, 336 runs at an average of 42. He actually had the highest average with the bat of anyone in the Glamorgan side because he had 4 not outs in his 12 innings, which I think pretty much summed up the role he played. 350s, very healthy strike rate as well. I've gone for a 9.
Ooh, wow. Okay. I haven't gone that high. I've gone 7.5 again. Mainly because I've only just wrote it down and I don't have that's the first time I've heard the stats because I was relying off your stats earlier and you've left out Sean Dixon. I've gone 7.5. I think, he just seemed to be the kind of glue, didn't he, in the middle order. And he's kind of, even in Red Bull cricket, like he's really grown into this season from having a pretty poor start in the Red Bull stuff to being one of Glamorgan's most reliable players now, most important players. And really good amount of runs, good average, as you said, from some of those not outs. And, that's really valuable because he sticks around in games and he's there at the end to kind of try and take the team home. And he's just, the middle order has been questionable at times, but I think Dixon can hold his hand up and say, I did everything I could in this tournament. Maybe could have gone 8, but I'll stick with 7.5 for now.
Yeah, I just think the games that came to mind, again, I didn't look over every scorecard when compiling these. I just think about both Somerset games. They had that kind of 60-odd away, obviously against his old side, obviously the Blight. And then at home, I know he didn't do too much, but I think he was like 16-5 balls or something, just finished it off, knocked out as well, obviously, when most of the work had already been done by Carlson. I just thought, you know what? Like you said, when a lot of batting failed, particularly Carlson didn't get any, it was almost like rushing the result away. But I think Dixon was almost the last saviour, really. I think there's cases for both. There's different perspectives for everyone. So if we move on to the all-rounders, these are full of disappointment. And when it was only when I was compiling the notes, I think I realised that this is where probably Glamorgan were weakest. Dan Douthwaite to start, 87 runs. He did have a 50 at Northants to kind of give them a saving chance. 13 wickets, went at over 9 and over. What have you gone for, Alex?
I've gone for 6. I think decent. Quite disappointing, a little bit disappointing. Decent is the operative word, I think. I think we were expecting him to kind of take a bit of a step up this year and kind of play a bigger role in the team, especially considering he's now been, he's pretty much a white ball specialist, isn't he? I can't remember the last time he played Red Bull cricket. And especially, he's a powerful guy, isn't he? And, he sends the ball down hard. He can hit the ball hard with his stature. And I was just hoping he would take a step up this year, and I don't think he has. I think at times it's looked like he's trying too hard a lot of the time. You can see he's visibly frustrated, and I think he's just maybe trying a bit too hard. I think he knew the pressure was on him as well to kind of step up this year, and it's particularly in the Blast. And I think he's kind of put that pressure back on himself. And is quite a frustrated figure at times. So, I struggle to go higher than a 6 for Dan, unfortunately.
Yeah, I went for a 5 for kind of similar reasons. I think, especially after that first innings and Northants away, when, as I said, kind of got it down to the last ball on a single-handed blow, we probably would have expected more, but then he only scored 36 more runs in the rest of the tournament. Maybe him and Nishan were playing too much of a similar role, which is obviously our next player to move on to. But Yeah, I was disappointed with him, and we didn't have a great One Day Cup last year either. So the fact he hasn't got 100 goal, he really needs to step up in the One Day Cup if we're Morgan are going to do well. Well, Jimmy Neesham then, 85 runs at an average of 21.25, which is a lot healthier than I remember it being. High score 27 not out, which I believe was Somerset away, which was probably one of his better moments. 7 wickets, went at nearly 10 and over. I've not held back here. I've gone for a 3, and I think that's generous. Oof.
Generous for a 3? Wow. I don't think he's been that bad. I've gone for 5. Because at the end of the day, he's had a few good moments, right? He's hit the winning runs at Somerset. And as you say, that average may be a bit flattering to the way he has bowled. But yeah, I have been disappointed. He has been disappointing from him, especially, you know, that to bowl that no ball at Warwickshire when all the pressure's on in the last over was just criminal to a guy like Dan Mosley, who, you know, I love. Yeah, disappointing. I think 3's harsh, but I have been disappointed by him. And whether, you know, whether it was kind of a, you know, obviously he came in kind of halfway through the tournament after Faruqi had left, whether it was a bit of a shotgun deal that, you know, as, and he wasn't quite ready for it or whatever, hasn't trained. I don't know, but, yeah, I think 5 is fair. I don't think 3 is fair.
Well, I tell you what I based
the
on.
Floor is yours to explain your 3.
He's an overseas player, and you'll see this when I come onto my McCandy rating as well. So we're almost always going to be expected to be the best player on the side. So that really disappointed me. So at one stage, I genuinely thought they could drop him and I would see a good reason for it. I think he probably did make Dalf Wade worse. I'm not saying that's necessarily his fault, but I just think that, you know, the roles they were playing. Okay, yes, when he bowled might have been down to Carlson's decisions. But that last over at Warwickshire was pretty unforgivable to go for 15 or defending 15 and you've gone for it with a ball to spare, but you bowled a no ball that went for 6 and then the free hit on 6. So, yeah, he had one match winning knock, which was just, you know, a finishing part. And Dixon basically did most of the damage there. And, yeah, as I said, I think the overseas waiting probably killed it for me. Thinking back to the past, last overseas, I can think of a few better. So that was it for me, but I'm happy to leave it there. We're not going to see him again. So that's fine. Ben Kelleway, this is a one I had a bit of contention on, and this is where I might bring in a decimal for myself, which will be my only one. 249 runs, an average of 20. Not a single 50, high score 47. Decent strike rate, 142. But then 14 wickets, an average under 20, and the best economy of all the bowlers in the side. Now, I was trying to separate this because I think his bowling deserved an 8, but I think his batting deserved a 3. So I don't know whether even going 5.5 is fair, but I'm happy to hear your contribution.
5.5?
Over, well, things I wanted to separate them so much because I think he bowled so well, but batted so poorly.
I've gone 7.5. I think, his bowling was excellent, right? And I think he grew it. He kind of grew into the tournament. He didn't. I don't think he started that well, or kind of not that he did badly, but he didn't really. Start to make a mark on the side in the opening couple of games, if my memory serves me correctly. But he had a really good back half to the season, especially in that kind of middle period where Glamorgan was still in the hunt for the quarterfinals. I think he stepped up really big, and that was what was pleasing for me, I think, as a kind of homegrown Welsh player, young player as well, one of the kind of poster boys, if you like, for Glamorgan at the moment. 100 player as well, obviously, you know, that there would have been a kind of pressure on him to kind of step up in the same way that we thought Douthwaite might. And I think Ben Kelleway did do that. Maybe not in the way we thought. Maybe, you know, I think we tended to think of him as a batting all-rounder than a bowling all-rounder, but obviously he's done better with the ball. But yeah, I think to have, you know, a spinner who had the best economy rate, in the campaign, and to take, was it 14 wickets you said in the end?
14, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a really good return. And so I like the way he went about it. I think, you know, he's still young and he's shown a lot of maturity. And I think, yeah, I think 7.5, it's more because I see so many encouraging signs with the way he's played, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I did really struggle over this rating because, as I said, I couldn't even bring myself to give him a single rating because his batting and bowling was so incomparable to one another. I just think batting three the whole tournament, he played every game as well. To bat three every game and not score a single 50 is pretty unforgivable. And it's probably where a lot of the kind of questions over the batting came, was because if Carlson didn't get any, you knew your number three was not really nailed on for any. And then, as we've said already, that's where it kind of came down for Dixon. So that's where I was really disappointed. And I thought his batting has come on. So to see that, I was pretty disappointed. But yeah, as we both probably said, bowling, sensational. A lot of his overs in the power play as well. So really impressive stuff. Which does bring us on to the bowlers. Nathan McAndrew, the marquee overseas, 15 wickets, an average of 24.8 runs per wicket. Economy of 10.62, which is actually the most expensive of any of the bowlers. You've got to bring into mind that he did bowl a lot of the overs in the power play and at the death, which is obviously where most of the runs are going to come. But personally, I was, again, with the kind of similar thing to Nisham, disappointed for how an overseas you'd expect and how he did perform. I've given him a 5, and I've got a feeling you're going to have gone a lot higher.
No, I've gone lower.
Lower?
I've given him a 4. Yeah, I was pretty disappointed with McAndrew, to be fair. As you said, maybe you have to take into account he did bowl a lot in the power play. But really good debut. I mean, what was he, 4 for 16 against Somerset in that first game? You know, that was excellent. And then to go on and kind of just fall off a cliff, really, in a lot of ways for the rest of the tournament, was disappointing. I think with, you know, bowlers in T20 cricket, you're always going to have games where you go for runs sometimes and you're expensive, especially seamers, especially people bowling in the power play. But it seemed that after that first game, he was getting hit every game. Like, he wasn't able to repeat that same form that he found in the first game. And if, you know, if you go through a tournament and you have one game where you bowl well and the next game you get smacked about a bit, you can live with that as a bowler. But it just seemed to kind of never get going for him after that first game. And I don't think he, you know, off the top of my head, he didn't provide too many runs with the bat. Missed the first two games as well, was it? With an injury or something we're still a little bit unclear about, which obviously when you sign in overseas to then miss the first two games as well, was disappointing. So yeah, I may be a bit harsh, but I was just disappointed with him, especially after, you know, last year when Glamorgan played Sussex at Hove and he absolutely ran through them. I was hoping to get that version of Nathan McAndrew, and I don't think we did, unfortunately.
And I think that was in my mind when I gave those ratings as well, that 11 wickets across two games against Glamorgan last year. And he just never had, even that 4 for 15 was a good bowling performance, but it never felt like he had that bowling spell that won them a game, like Mason throwing off and does. And that was obviously, yeah, what you expect from your overseas fast bowler to have one of those spells. And it just felt like every game is pretty similar for him. Like after that 4 for 15, every game just felt like he took one or two of it for 4 to 5 runs, roughly 4 to 5 runs. Which, as I said, is kind of almost, you'd prefer inconsistency, but he has games where he wins you a game and then somewhere he just goes 0 for 60. You'd rather that than just consistently 1 for 40. Like, if that makes sense.
I think I think we saw in the first game, like the full arsenal of what he could bowl. You know, that I think there was some good he hit some good Yorkers in there. There was a few cutters and all of the type of things you need in T20 cricket to be an effective bowler. And I don't think he did that in the rest of the games too much. You know, I think it was all about varying his line and length, which is, yeah, it's important, but you also need to be able to hit a good Yorker length, and you need to bowl good off-speed balls and cutters and all of that. And I just don't think we really saw that. I don't think he was thinking too much about what he was bowling at times. He was just maybe getting frustrated that he was going for runs and trying to send it down quickly or shorten his length to kind of give the bat something to think about. Yeah, I just don't think we really saw the best of what he's capable of. And it's disappointing.
Well, let's move on to Tim van der Gutten then. Just 3 wickets, 8 matches. So bowling average, pretty irrelevant to look at. Economy over 9, though. Personally, I think he shouldn't have played much, if at all, in this competition. I think the fact he played 8 matches was pretty remarkably unremarkable, I think. I don't want to see him in the one-day cup either, so I hope they don't pick him. Not because I think he's poor. I think he's a good bowler, but it's either doing him. You know, he's 35, yeah, 36 yeah. years old. You know, he bowls the most overs in the red ball. And his performances, albeit probably, you know, it's just not in his game. And the fact they're trying to make him a T20 player, I don't approve of. And that's why he's got my lowest rating. He's a 2.
That's extremely harsh. Extremely harsh. I've gone 5.5, which might contradict my Nathan McAndrew rating. But yeah, disappointing figures. I do think he was a little bit unlucky at times with some of the runs that he went for, which again might be contradictory to what I've just said about Nathan McAndrew. But I've sort of bumped him above Nathan McAndrew because I think we saw more with the bat from van der Hooten than we did from McAndrew. I think back to that reverse scoop at Blackpool, and maybe that is clouding my judgment slightly that game.
That is one thing that I did think he could have been bumped to a 3, but I stuck with my guns because I was thinking of him purely as a bowler, not an all-rounder.
Yeah, I always think probably the tail starts below van der Hooten in this competition, because similarly to Douthwaite, he's a really strapping lad, isn't he? And he's got a lot of power. And we've seen him when he times the ball well, he can really make a difference. And I think he has done that at times this tournament. And yeah, the bowling hasn't quite gone his way. But as I said, I think he has been a little bit unlucky in some games. But as you said, I don't want to see him in the One Day Cup either, for exactly the reasons that you said. He doesn't need to play in that competition. It's not a competition that's going to be for him. It's about developing the young bowlers in this system. And I want to see him wrapped in cotton wool and rested nicely for the end of the championship season now. But yeah, put the white ball cricket aside for a bit and focus on red ball.
Right, from one bowler who we need to wrap up in cotton wool to another, Ned Leonard. 4 wickets, just 4 matches, and then inevitably, as Ned Leonard does, got injured, went over 10 and over in the games he does play, which I think is just kind of what we've come to expect from him when we see him bowling white ball cricket now. Good effective wicket taker, but can be expensive. Obviously, we didn't see too much of him. I've gone for a 4, just purely because we didn't see too much of him. You know, he didn't stand out. I mean, as I said at the start of this podcast, I basically forgot that he played at all at the start of the tournament, and he is just always injured.
Yeah, I've gone for a 4 as well. Found it tough, didn't he? As you said, young player, but I think he's been there long enough now that he does have to improve a little bit, and hopefully the One Day Cup is the important competition for him. But he might be injured again, isn't he? I think. Anyway, hopefully you get some games in the One Day Cup. But I think I go back to as well is in T20 cricket now, and Mason Crane has spoken about this with not only T20 cricket, but Test match cricket as well. If you want to kind of get in the side and make yourself undroppable, you've got to do something with the bat as well. And I know he's not a batsman, obviously. I know that, but you never really see anything with him with the bat. You know, every now and again, a tail ender will have a good game of the bat. And he's just found it tough, being expensive, taking wickets. But in T20 cricket, it's about keeping the score down, isn't it? Rather than, you know, wickets can change games at key times, are important for change of momentum, but it's about ultimately the economy rate, really. And yeah, he's just got to find an extra gear for me in next year's competition.
Yeah, there's not much more we can say about him. Someone who's not played much, and it's a shame because I think he's probably the most forgettable member on the squad list at the moment, because he's not as young as someone like Hurl or Callum Nichols, who's not played a game. But he is, you know, not really getting a chance. It obviously took a fifer against Somerset last year in the Blast, which was brilliant. But we need a consistent run of games. The potential is definitely there, but he needs to keep his fitness, which unfortunately is not always his own fault. But last two bowlers, both are pretty positive, I think. Starting with Andy Gorvin, someone else who didn't play a great deal. Only 4 wickets for him as well. Much less expensive though, 8.07 economy for him. Took a 3-fer as well in one of the games. So again, someone who didn't play a lot, but what have you gone for, Alex?
I know you love Andy Gorvin, and not that I dislike it, I've gone for a 6. I think, again, similarly to Ned Leonard, you know, obviously his economy rate is two runs lower than Ned Leonard's, which is good. Only played the 4 games, unfortunately. And I think a big reason for that is exactly as I said with Ned Leonard, you don't get a lot out of him with a bat. And if you're a average bowler in T20 cricket and you're not providing runs with the bat, you're going to find yourself in and out of the team. And I think that's unfortunately where Andy Gorvin is at the moment, where he's, you know, obviously he's going to captain the one day side, which is great. And he'll get a consistent run of games in that comp. But in this comp, I think he'll be disappointed probably with the amount of games that he played. But I think at the moment he's leaving himself vulnerable to being dropped because he's kind of bowling okay, not setting the world alight, and then not really providing much with the bat either. So yeah, 6, kind of middle of the road. Couldn't really justify him giving any more or any less, really.
Yeah, I think you might have actually swayed me. So I did put a 7, but I think, again, I could be flexible to go to a 6 here, just purely on, again, I think you're right there. He didn't necessarily stand out particularly. You know, it's hard to stand out when you only play 4 games, don't get me wrong. But the thing that irked me this competition was I was calling for him to play over Tim van der Gucht time and time again. They're not that dissimilar in T20 cricket, you know. Tim van der Gucht's a few miles an hour quicker, but not the amount that's going to make a difference. And Gorvin's got way better skill set. He bowls with the keeper up. Obviously, a lot of his catches, you know, a lot of his wickets come from catches on the boundary, those kind of things. Almost as if, you know, you've got a hybrid of a seamer and a spinner. So, yeah, that's why I originally wrote a 7. Just didn't see enough of him, unfortunately. But I am always going to be generous to a medium pacer, because, you know, we need a place somewhere.
As you say, I think that his style of bowling suits T20 cricket more than somebody like Tim. You know, we've seen how many times pace off is often the better option in T20 cricket, or can be more effective. And as you said, I think he has got a greater range of skills in this format than van der Hooten. And we just didn't see it, really. And it's a shame, because if he can really execute those skills, I think he then makes himself, you know, one of the first names on the team sheet in this comp.
Yeah, while we're on him as well, One Day Cup, obviously we now know that he's going to be captain. We've only known that for a couple of days, and our preview with thoughts from both me and Alid and our predicted 11 will be out on the website before the opening game. Do you think a fair choice as captain? Unusual to see it given to a bowler. But they were probably a bit short on options, weren't they?
Yeah, and I sort of, that was one of the names I had written down, probably alongside Dan Douthwaite. as kind of more of those left field choices. I think we kind of thought it might be between Chris Cook and possibly even Colin Ingram, if they wanted to get an experienced member of that side, captain in the side. But they've decided to obviously go with Govan. And I think it's a good choice. I'm really pleased for him. As I said, he's kind of been in and out of the team from in both formats that we've played so far, Red Bull cricket and T20 cricket. And I'm excited for him to get his feet under the table a little bit this season in, you know, get regular games in a competition, and hopefully he can string a bit of form together without sort of looking over his shoulder at Tom Norton or Jimmy Neesham or Nathan McAndrew or somebody who's going to come in and take his place. I think he'll go into this competition with a clear mindset of what he wants to do, both as a bowler and as a captain. And you know, we heard it from Wallace, didn't we, that he's a well-respected and really liked member of that dressing room who's been there a while now. And I'm really glad for him, and I hope he really takes his opportunity.
I think he's a bit of a luxury as well, in that as a fast bowler being captain, you often don't see it because, you know, they need rest and rotation. Whereas Govan, the style of bowler he is, he doesn't need that rest and rotation. His one-day stats weren't great last year from having a brief look, but it was a really poor campaign for everyone. And I think he's one of those bowlers who do well when the team does well, because he's someone you're going to bring on after the power play, hopefully get those wickets of the guys that are going well, be a real partnership breaker. And last year, you know, he was opening the bowling with Zainul Hasan at times. It's like you couldn't get a probably more unthreatening new ball pair than two 70-mile-an-hour bowlers with a keeper back. I just think, you know, if they can bowl him to his right skill set, then that'll work.
Well, he'll get to pick it this time around, won't he? You know, he'll get to pick where he bowls. He can pick what end he bowls probably, and he can suit it to what he believes his skill set is, and obviously, you know, he knows that better than anyone. He's going to be one of the senior players in the team now, with the One Day Cup being a quite a developmental competition and players away at the 100 and what have you. So it's really his blueprint now to put down where he wants to bowl, where he wants to put people in the field, and where he wants to field from when he's not bowling and stuff. So I think it's exciting for him. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he comes up with.
And just finally, I just want to add to that as well. His club form actually has been really good this year. I think he had a 5 for earlier in the season. He had 100 and a 97, which shows he is actually capable of bowling a bat. Maybe he'll, you know, if he's got a fair few inexperienced bowlers, he might put himself at kind of 8. I think any higher than that would be problematic. But when you've got other young players for other sides that are going to be coming in, it is a step up from club cricket, but he might just get that knack for wickets and show his capability with the bat against the kind of lesser sides. Which would be nice to see.
Yeah.
Finally, absolutely. Mason Crane. Well, this is obviously one of your favourites. So I've had my chance to shine with Govan. You've got yours with Mason Crane, joint top wicket taker, 15 wickets with McAndrew, average of just 20, an economy under 8, which as a leg spinner is pretty remarkable. Best figures 4 for 24. Alad, I'll let you start off.
I've gone 8.5. Was tempted with a 9, but I'll keep it 8.5 for now. Excellent job. I mean, to marry up wickets with a good economy rate as a leg spinner in T20 cricket is not easy to do. I think, you know, Sophia Gardens has been, as we've seen with Ben Kellaway's figures as well, has been a decent hunting ground for spinners. So, you know, that helps, but he has bowled really, really well, and he's set his field really, really well as well. Obviously, with spinners, the field settings is so, so important when you're trying to bait batters into going after you and whatever. And then, you know, I go back to it. He gets more praise from me, not only for the bowling, but because he's chipped in with runs as well. And that's something, you know, we've seen in Red Bull cricket this season. He obviously talked to us about improving his batting throughout the summer, really worked on that. And you can see it. Again, not the biggest of blokes, doesn't hit a massive ball, but he knows his own game, he knows his own capabilities, and he's just you know, he's come in at the back end of innings sometimes and just played a really, really important cameo with a bat as well. Earned himself a 100 contract, and he's just been outstanding. You know, in both competitions that we've played so far, he's having a stellar season. And yeah, hope he can play a couple of games in the 100 as well and have a really good comp there.
Yeah, I've basically got nothing to add. I gave him an 8, so very similar. Yeah, just really reliable. Couldn't really fault much that he did wrong. A couple of times as a leg spinner, they're going to get after you. I think my only kind of, it's not even a disappointment because it's not his fault, but the only upsetting thing, I think he didn't get as much talk as he potentially would, and he didn't get as many wickets as he did last time out in the T20 Blast. But Calvin Harrison obviously had a great campaign. He also was not expensive at all. Won them games single-handedly, Northampton, and obviously they won the title. So I think he probably would take that crown as the best leg spinner in the comp, and has got a few heads turning, actually, Calvin Harrison this year. So I think it's a bit of a shame for Mason that it probably sets him back a little bit in terms of further selection. He may just get leapfrogged. But, you know, he can only do as well as he can, and I think he did have a good season.
Yeah, I think he's kind of almost used to that at this point, isn't he? You know, he obviously burst onto the scene early on in his career and kind of faded away a little bit. And now he's obviously come to Glamorgan and is starting to reemerge again in sort of international talk and, you know, whatever format you're thinking for him at the moment he's delivering, whatever format he plays. And I just think he's a quality cricketer who's grown into his own game now, knows his own game, knows what he's doing, really good cricket brain, and just such a valuable member for the squad. Really, really pleased that he came to Glamorgan, to be honest.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's been probably one of their best signings, if not their best signing of the last 5 years. I didn't give ratings to these guys, but just three players who played fewer than 4 matches that are worth touching upon. Faruqi, the Afghan left-arm seamer, came in, played the first 2 games, then got shipped back to Afghanistan to play international cricket. Had a good start. Alex Horton played just 1 game, scored 7. Colin Ingram played just 1 game as well, scored 7. I can think of 2 of those players, of those 3, that probably could have given Glamorgan the difference to potentially qualify if they had been available a bit more.
Well, Faruqi's a disappointing one, isn't it? You know, obviously nothing Glamorgan could or Faruqi could do about what happened, but he's someone that I really wish to see back next year for the whole tournament, because he started it really, really well. And when, you know, you're talking about Warwickshire away and you're looking at Jimmy Neesham bowling the last over, if you had Faruqi there, I think, you know, he bowls that last over and it might go a different way. And some of those other games might go different ways as well if he's there. So, yeah. Who's the other player you're thinking of? Colin Ingram?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it might be. I think Alex Horton has kind of flattered to deceive a lot, hasn't he, in T20 cricket. Yeah, Colin Ingram, yeah. It's a strange one with Ingram, because I think now I get the sense that he is playing this season because Glamorgan are back in Division 1, and he kind of wanted, and deservedly so, a taste of Division 1 cricket after being such a good servant to the club in Division 2. I think this might be his last year, as he's sort of starting to move into coaching now, and he's starting to take that more seriously. And, you know, we'll probably see him maybe do a bit more coaching in the One Day Cup as opposed to playing. Depends on how his body's feeling as well. But yeah, he picked up that injury in that Northants game. It's a bit of a weird one, wasn't it? Didn't seem very sort of, nothing really happened. It wasn't like he injured himself fielding or batting or something. It was kind of inconspicuous. But yeah, shame that he couldn't play the comp. But yeah, I think he's starting to move towards the coaching side now anyway. And Glamorgan are probably better off not relying on Colin Ingram, because I don't think he's going to be there much longer.
Yeah, 41 years old, probably about time, just kind of similar to Tim van der Gucht, and just look after him. Didn't play a game in the One Day Cup last year because he was on the coaching staff. Chris Cook also didn't play a game last year, was not technically on the coaching staff, but didn't play. So, I mean, personally, I'd like to see that again this year. Just let them have their moments. It's 6 games in 6 weeks for the 4 days to end the season, so that they don't even get a week off in those 6 weeks. And I don't think Glamorgan need to worry about results for the One Day Cup this season. I just think, look at the youngsters. I've got 7 names of people who didn't play in the T20 Blast that are on the squad list. That's Billy Root, Jack Hope-Bell, Callum Nichols, Ben Morris, Romano Franco, Zainal Hassan, and Jamie McElroy, who all didn't play in the Blast that are on the squad list. Tom Norton as well, but we've just found out that he's injured, as is Ned Leonard, so they won't play, at least at the start of the competition. We're not sure how that will get reviewed throughout. But I just think there's plenty of other options.
Yeah, and as I said, I think it's time to look to life beyond Colin Ingram. You know, it's been amazing, and obviously he'll still be a part of the Red Bull side, we assume, because, you know, that's where his kind of best game is, I think. But yeah, this comp is not a competition that they should be looking to rely on Chris Cook and Colin Ingram. Let them go and be a part of the coaching staff. Let them go and develop themselves as coaches and as mentors and stuff for these young guys, and give the young guys the ropes in this tournament and see what they can do. And I think, you know, I think that's pretty fairly obvious. We'll see that happen. But yeah, excited to see, hopefully, you know, perhaps two new coaches on the bill going forward, and hopefully a few more players, like you mentioned, Hope-Bell and those kind of guys coming through.
Yeah, and if you want more views from us on the One Day Cup, you can read our preview, which will emerge at some point before Wednesday, when the first game is at Neath against Sussex. Just wrap up on the Blast talk then before we move on to the women's success. 24 points, they came fifth in their 6-team group. Bit of a false position, 6 wins, 6 losses. Tied on points with both fourth and sixth, so they could have finished bottom with 50% ratio, could have finished fourth. They were only 1 win away from finishing third and getting through to the quarterfinal, so just showed how close it was. We've already discussed the games they're going to look at as disappointments. The Warwickshire away with Neesham's last over. 4 games on the final ball. They won 2, lost 2, so that's pretty fair. They lost both to Worcestershire, is probably the only thing you can say.
Yeah, in similar fashion as well, wasn't it? It was just a collapse in the middle order. Those will be the two, I think, that they'll really regret. Obviously, one with the light, the issue with the light, which, you know, was a contentious one at the time and still stings a little bit. But that home game, there was no excuse for that. Those were the ones they needed to be winning, and they couldn't get it done ultimately. Yeah, as you said, maybe a bit of a false position. I don't know where Somerset came from, because I saw that they qualified for quarterfinals, and it almost made me sick. I was like, where have they come from? They've been nowhere so far this tournament and just suddenly picked up some steam at the back end. And that's the difference. Like, Glamorgan, you know, started the tournament fairly well and then faded away, and Somerset did the opposite and ended up at finals day. So, you know, that's the difference. And Glamorgan have got to learn lessons from not only this year, but last year as well. I think, you know, it was pretty similar comp. Yes, it's in a tough group. The South group had always been the kind of tougher group as well, but that's not going to change. They're going to play the same sides. So they've got to get used to that, and they've got to find ways to win.
Yeah, disappointing competition. And as we mentioned at the start, Kieran Carlson also told me at that final game that he was disappointed with the campaign. And you can read more about that on the Taff and Daff website as well. But if we look at where there has been some recent success, the women's side, which, if you have read my recent opinion piece, Aled, you'll know I'm not actually overly excited about the women's success just yet, because I see it as half a job done. I think as a minimum, they need to replicate Yorkshire from last season, who did the double before they move into tier one. But just a really professional performance, wasn't it? And as I wrote as well, I think the right people played well. Beth and Gammon, Gemma Porter, standout performers as players that are going to be looking at tier one.
Yeah, done really well. But I think you're maybe slightly harsh on them with maybe muted optimism, I suppose. But I do agree with you. They kind of do have to take care of these two comps this season and replicate Yorkshire, because it, you know, we've seen how big a step up it is when Glamorgan have gone against tier one opposition. And you know, it's important for all of those players in the side to put their hands up and you know, put themselves in the window for a tier one contract next year and to be kept on. And you know, some of those players that you mentioned who will be in contention for that, Gemma Porter, Beth Gammon, maybe Daisy Jeans as well, you know, have got to prove, they've got to do all that they can do in tier two and dominate that tier to prove that they can make the step up and, you know, perform when they play tier one opposition. So it's going to be a very new look team next year, I think, which we expect, obviously. And yeah, they've done one part of the job, and they've got to go on and have a really strong back end of the campaign. Unfortunately, that with them, there's a pressure on them now where it's not about winning, it's about winning well. You're not only playing the opposition that's in front of you, you're kind of playing the stats and the kind of opinions, I suppose, of whether you can take that into tier one cricket. You're kind of playing that as well, which isn't easy because obviously that's intangible. But they can only do what they can do. They can beat who's put in front of them and beat them well. And then they can, you know, they can hold their hands up and say, we did all we could. To those ones who aren't offered a tier one contract, can walk away and say, I did all I could.
I suppose that's what is worth us talking about them for, you know, rather than just saying, you know, Glamorgan Women won, because they've only lost one game this season other than in the County Cup, that one Vitality Blast game. They lost to Kent. They haven't lost one in the One Day Cup just yet, which resumes for them on Sunday, the 26th at Neath, as they take on Sussex. But do we think they are winning well enough? I guess that's the question that is to come. 32 runs in the final over Gloucestershire, but it never really looked in too much doubt.
Yeah, I think, you know, a 32 run victory is a substantial victory. You know, in a final as well, when, as we've said, there is that extra pressure on you. The Gloucestershire team would have, you know, would have gone into that final with kind of no pressure on them, right? They would have had nothing to lose, and Glamorgan would have gone into that game with everything to lose, really. So, you know, that's not easy to navigate. And they got it done and did it well. I think once you start, and I'm sure Rachel Priest isn't putting markers down or targets on how many they should be beating aside by, because I think when you put those targets down, it can distract from the actual job in front of you. So I think it's dangerous to potentially do that. I think they just need to focus on their own game, focus on their cohesion as a team and their communication. And Lauren Parfitt obviously will lead that, and just go out, play their best cricket, keep their foot on the pedal of whoever they're playing. You know, be relentless. There's nothing wrong with, you don't have to be friendly just because somebody's, you know, worse off than you. Yes, you can be sporting and sportsmanlike, but there's nothing wrong with playing hard and playing relentless cricket. And I think, you know, ultimately they're not there for an amateur game, a game on a Sunday where they shake hands and have a beer with the team after. This is, you know, this is top level, elite level sport, and they're competing for spots next year. So I think the message should be, focus on beating who's put in front of you, put your best foot forward and be relentless with it as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. Be relentless, win well. And I just can't stop thinking about who's going to get those contracts next year from the current side. It's something I'm very much looking forward to come the end of the season. Just your reminders that Glamorgan men play their first game in the Metrobank One Day Cup on Wednesday against Sussex. They play again at Neath on Friday, and then the women take on Sussex women on Sunday at Neath.
Should we plug that we're on the live stream comms for that?
Yes, we are. Yeah. So if you want to listen to Taff and Daff reporters even more, you can listen to Alad and I on the Glamorgan live stream on Wednesday's game. The opener against Sussex will be on the live stream commentary on Glamorgan's channels. But for now, I think that's all for this episode of One Team in Wales. Thank you for listening if you got this far. It was a rather comprehensive episode, and it's been the first one for a while. But naturally, as summer is well and truly here now, other things do get in the way and other work commitments for us both. But we're going to keep working hard to bring you all the best coverage on Taff and Daff with news, reports, opinions and interviews coming your way. So thank you to Alad once again for this episode and for joining me and your thoughts on the blast, albeit disappointing. But that's where we'll leave it for today. And as we said, tune in on Wednesday to the live stream for the opening game. Hopefully we get to see some youngsters perform well. But until then, see you next time. Goodbye.